With careful attention to these choices and to these practices we're talking about here, even crops like watermelons have been grown successfully in dry lands. So conserving carefully, distributing what rainfall is available, and choosing crops that can best tolerate dry conditions are key factors for success. And the soil itself is also a key factor. Dry land soils are, as you might expect, relatively poor in nutrients because dry conditions allow a lot of topsoil to be blown away. So the quality of the thin topsoils must be preserved and maintained as carefully as possible. The most obvious help here is fertilizers. But other techniques like mulching, putting a protective cover over the field, like all vegetable matter, plants, stalks and leaves, for example, help solve this problem of soil deterioration. As I said before, dry lands by their nature are not very good, relatively speaking, for growing our food, and part of that is that they are more susceptible to low crop yields or complete crop failures. This is something that dry land farmers must always keep in mind and must always plan to be ready to deal with. If the year turns ugly, if it is even drier and colder or hotter than usual, the farmer must be ready and willing to abandon his effort for that year, and in that way to save his fertilizers and his seeds and his energy. On the other hand, in promising years where the weather is boding fair, the farmer should be quick to take advantage of it by boosting yields with extra or broader plantings and by extending his growing cycle and so on. With such approaches as these and others we develop, the productivity of such marginal dry lands may be able to help us keep up with our irresistibly growing populations. We can at least take hope in the thought that the natives of the arid American Southwest, the Hopi, the Zuni, and the Navajo, survived for hundreds of years on dry land farming in an area with less than 25 centimeters of rainfall per year.